You are listening to Sparking Wholeness with Erin Carey, where we talk about all things related to nutrition for mind, body, and soul. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey, everybody, it's Erin Carey. Welcome back to Sparking Wholeness. Today, I'm sitting down with Jennifer Nathanson. She is a functional medicine provider and parenting coach. She firmly believes feeling confident in parenting impacts our overall well-being by decreasing, removing one of our main stressors, which is self-doubt as a parent. And she uses the nurtured heart approach of parenting, which we're going to talk all about. So Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Erin. Thank you. It's exciting to be here and to be able to share about Nurtured Heart. I love talking about it.
Yeah. And before we get into that topic, I want everybody to know that we know each other because of the School of Applied Functional Medicine. And so I've had a couple of our tribe mastermind friends, colleagues on the show before, and it's always so much fun because we are very like-minded in getting to the root of things instead of just addressing symptoms. And so some people might be like, wait, functional medicine provider and then also parenting coach, how does that go together? But it totally goes together. We're not talking about behavior modification. We're not talking about treating symptoms. We're talking about getting to the root of what is going on with our kids. And there's a lot going on. So yeah, just give some background on what Nurtured Heart is.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to share my story a little bit and how.
Actually that's better. Yeah.
Which I think will also tie in like my background with functional medicine as well. And so I'm traditionally a nurse practitioner. I trained in conventional medicine, practiced for over 15 plus years as a nurse practitioner in a surgery subspecialty. And during that time, I got married and had three kids, and my middle son, who I say is my intense kiddo, who kind of brought me to searching both more into different forms of medicine, but also into parenting. And I was working at the time, trying to discover if there was any different ways that I could be supporting him. And I was working with an integrative pediatrician at the time. And I said, undoubtedly, there's something that we're doing at home as parents that are probably impacting our son's behavior as well, Jack's behavior. And he said, oh, yeah. He goes, I want you to try this approach. And this is a trainer I'd like you to work with. I've had some great success with it. And that's how I learned about the Nurtured Heart approach. And going kind of back to your original question, it's truly been both looking at physiological causes or reasons for what might be underlying Jack's behavior, and then also looking at parenting as what might be also contributing to what's going on in our home. And delving into both of those and making shifts, generally small shifts at a time so that they're sustainable has been what's been the biggest game changer in our home. And Nurtured Heart, for by far, that parenting approach has been the one that I've been able to hold on to and have the most success with, and that has led me to feel super confident as a parent.
I love that. Yeah, I think most of us, there's tons of parenting books out there, right? There's training manuals, but I think most of us, we do go into parenting blind. And blind other than, and depending on if I was a single mom for the first 4 years of my parenting journey, but for people that have a partner in the journey, now we're talking about two different ways of being raised. And most people are just probably going to raise their kids in the way that they were raised or some combination of it, even if they didn't like the way they were raised, right? Even if they didn't think it was best, we don't know what else to do, right?
Totally.
So what were some things that you had to relearn in this approach or change your viewpoint on?
Oh yeah. I think that what we don't really appreciate is that a lot of what our kids are picking up is what we're modeling. So it's kind of like, as we grow into being parents, we can't help ourselves but model and parent in the way that was modeled to us. So one of my parents growing up was a big yeller. And had a big temper. And so I was a screamer and yeller with my kids, which I don't want to say I'm embarrassed to say. I'm really grateful that that's one thing that Nurtured Heart Approach has really helped me to get a handle on. Like, I now know that there's going to be triggering situations that come up, but I know what to do, and I know that I can keep myself from going to a place where at the end of the night I'm, have that negative spiral of telling myself that I'm a terrible parent because I did X, Y, or Z during the day. So relearning with Nurtured Heart, the biggest thing that I think I've had to relearn as a parent is that concept of being able to notice when I'm starting to feel that escalation in myself, which is often being triggered by something that the kids are doing, and just stopping and pausing. And the pause can be seconds. Sometimes it needs to be a little longer, and I have to excuse myself to go use the bathroom or just say, hey guys, I need to take a minute. But just taking enough space so that I can then choose how I want to respond in the situation instead of just going into reaction mode, which is what I was doing prior to. And then the other big piece of Nurtured Heart, which is amazing, is, I think that we, because of our brain's negativity bias, and that's just kind of how we are socially and culturally, we're always looking for what's going wrong. And Nurtured Heart really flips that. Instead of us focusing on what's going wrong with our kids and feeling like, oh, we need to teach in the moment that things are not right, I have to let my kid know that this isn't the thing to be doing and teach them how to do the right thing because I'm the parent and I'm supposed to be raising this child. What with Nurtured Heart, what we really know is that kids aren't learning in that moment anyways. They've gone into fight or flight. We're in fight or flight, so nobody's taking any information in. And what tends to really work is not putting much focus on that at all. We call it, we use a lot of energy, the transmission of energy between people in relationship. And instead of putting focus on that, we really focus on when our kids are doing well or making good choices. And even to the smallest of things, emphasizing, I see you, I hear you, I can see that you're making a good choice. I can see that you're really putting effort into, whatever it is, tying your shoe, or I can see that you're taking your plate to the sink to put in the dishwasher. And just letting our kids know that we are appreciating and seeing what they are capable of so that they start telling themselves, oh, my mom or my dad or this parent in my life or this adult in my life is telling me they are seeing these things and hearing these things. I must be that kid, right? They're telling me that instead of, oh, they're telling me I'm doing it wrong again. And it really shifts. I've seen it shift and I hear it shift with the
Yeah.
clients that I work with.
That's so good and so true. And of so many things that I could ask you about from there. It's interesting you mentioned just the energy of emotions and connection. And I was thinking about that this morning when I was taking my kids to school. We've had this crazy storm and the lightning. I've never seen lightning like this. Like, we have thunderstorms here where I live in East Texas, but this was next level. Yesterday was the eclipse for listeners. I don't know when this will air, but that's shifted a lot of things in our environment, mentally, emotionally, physically. But as I was driving my kids to school and we were looking at the lightning, and I just for a second, I was like, oh, wow, what an interesting teachable moment. I told them, I said, as much as that electricity of that lightning is changing the environment where it touches down, I said, that is what your attitude is going to do for the people around you today, and your kindness and your support and your encouragement to your friends and your participation in your classroom with your teacher. I said, every single emotion carries with it a different energy. And we can measure this. I'm not saying this in a woo-woo way. And I don't know if you've read Biology of Belief, but that was a game changer for me when I read that. I think it was in our level one program. It was in between level one and two. I needed something to read in that summer to keep myself going. And that was an incredible read just about how our emotions and our beliefs and our thoughts impact how our cells emit energy and how our cells communicate with each other. And so I say all that because as parents, not to shame anybody, but that energy, whether, like you said, the reactionary, the yelling, and I'm kind of a yeller too. I just get frustrated and just, bleh. I'm just an emotional person anyway. And yeah. So I'll get mad, be like, get your shoes on or whatever. Instead of, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath, because that's not going to accomplish anything. If I'm telling my amazing, wonderful, neurodivergent 7-year-old, just get your shoes on, when he's like in a mental tailspin, like that's not going to help him. Right. And so all I can do at that place is manage my own emission of energy, my own lightning current is what that makes me think of.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what's interesting is I think a lot of people come to parenting approaches or seeking out help with parenting, thinking I need to change my kid. My kid needs to change. Mm-hmm. I need to change they need help changing their behavior. And I know what is very true for myself. And I hear it from other, you know, people who are practicing nurtured heart in their homes and in their lives, is it's really all about us and our managing our mm-hmm. responses and our reactions and noticing. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way. As I feel like as the mom in my home, I think as parents in general, I think fathers have the same effect too. I certainly see it in my home. But as parents, we kind of hold the energy. We have the capability of really shifting how the home feels based on how we are in that space. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that is definitely not something that I was thinking about or considering before Nurtured Heart. I was never thinking about how our energy has such an impact on how our kids are and how we're interacting with our kids at more of that energetic level, that how much that impacts who they are as well.
Yeah. And what you mentioned, that mood change, right? Like I think about, so in my relationship with my husband, even he is like the calm, chill version of me. I'm very outward. Like I get excited about stuff and then I'm like bummed about stuff. And that's just the person that I am. And I go with that. He mm-hmm. is very chill. So when he's not, when something's going on for him, not even having to do with anything in our family, but professionally or work-wise, or we all feel it. And it is such a profound shift in somebody who is very chill that, yeah. I mean, it goes to show just how much, like you said, that and typically moms are the ones, and this is not, I don't want to generalize, but usually moms are the ones who are going to be more in the trenches with the kids, you know, doing some of the, and that this, again, it's not always been the case, even in our family, but it's like, but those dads, like we forget that all of our emotions impact our kids. So I'm so glad that you touched on, and it's different depending on the person and the personality.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in our home, it's the opposite. Like I'm now having done Nurtured Heart for a while, I'm kind of the more calm parent. Mm-hmm. And my husband tends to be more reactive. And so and he works much more out of the home than I do, much more than I do. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, when he comes home, the energy can really shift depending on, you know, how his day has been or how he's doing, or if he's been able to kind of reset himself before coming into the mm-hmm. house, you know, which is really hard to do a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's important. That's an important reminder for the parents who do work outside of the home. That reset before you get home is so key. And I even, when I used to have a longer commute, like 20, 25 minutes, I liked that because I felt like I needed it. I needed just a chance to transition. And we don't give ourselves that. We just go, go, go. And what is that pace of life, that modern parenting pace of life from activity to activity to activity? What is that doing for our kids?
Yeah. 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 I think it depends, you know, I'm hearing different stuff around this. I think that the go, go, go in general, I think is hard on everybody. Personally, I think kids definitely need downtime to just do creative play, unstructured creative play. I've been hearing this a lot, actually, a lot specifically with ADHD kids that, they get really resistant and they have a hard time with change. They often don't want to try things because they're concerned they're not going to be good at them. And so they're often, kids who like screens because they feel successful and they get that big dopamine hit and rush. And yet, for them to be successful all throughout life, it's more the interactions that they're having and the different exposures that they get through different activities, and also a lot of unstructured play. And I think that our culture, because of how significant and impactful screens are right now, it's having such a huge, profound impact on our kids and especially our intense kids, because, I think they're finding themselves to feel good and successful playing video games and being on screen. And yet, in the big picture and in the long run, like at some point, they're out of your home, needing to be independent and taking care of themselves and doing all of the day-to-day tasks. And if they're not given those opportunities, then apparently what I heard recently is that in the United States, there's a huge issue with kids going off to college and not being able to handle being like in the first semester, and there's a huge dropout rate. And it's like, I know for myself, and I think most parents, that's not the goal, right? The have your kids leave the home, whether it's going off to college or whatever their choice is, but being successful, obviously having some hardships at times, we all do, but being able to manage that and move forward. So.
That's really fascinating. I think the whole idea of having variety with the kids' activities, some structured, some unstructured. I've never considered that being feeling successful at screens as contributing to like the addiction dopamine aspect of it, but that totally makes sense because there is a lot of like, I think about my undiagnosed youngest neurodivergent who I'm still debating, and maybe we can talk about this. Still debating if I get the official diagnosis or not. Would it be helpful? Like right now, he's doing great at school. School is fine. He's doing okay. It's at home, and home is where I guess the mask comes off, and where he wants to. He under he I'm wondering if he overfunctions at school, so he underfunctions at home and has us wants us to do things for him and then wants to do nothing but be on screens or do whatever it is that sit on the couch with his blankie, which is very sweet. But yeah, I just think there's a lot there of how do I provide as help him to feel successful in those things that might be hard for him? Like, how do I model that for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. God, there's quite a few different things that I was thinking of while you were asking that question. But I think that, from a nurtured heart perspective, what we would say is showing him in any way where he's being successful, even in we talk about baby steps, like, with babies who are learning to walk. We get so excited about the smallest move that may they make towards walking. And yet, as our kids get older, we kind of lose sight of that idea of celebrating and noticing and speaking up to sharing with them, I see you. I see you making that smallest step toward whatever it is. And that's all our kids really want is to know that they're being seen and heard, and of course, loved and accepted unconditionally by their parents. But when we share with them, I see you doing this thing, or I hear you talking really gently and kindly with your sibling, when we start saying these things, then they get to internalize it. So I think for your son, it would be whatever he is doing right or well, even the smallest thing. I see you using your fork to eat your potatoes tonight, whatever it is. Then they start thinking to themselves, oh, I can do stuff. And then when they try anything new, wow, you were so brave to try that. You know, whatever we can do to help them feel like they are capable, because they are so capable, but they do, our more intense kids, neurodivergent, ADHD, whatever we want to call them, they're often more sensitive. They do tend to not want to try stuff. Like my middle son, he is like a diehard perfectionist. And so that really gets in his way, because he'll try stuff, but the minute he feels like he's not really good at it, it's like, I don't want to do that.
I feel that. I so feel that. That was me.
And that's tough. I mean, that's a tough one to get around. And I think it's, you know, just as parents, it's hard, because it's just, it puts a little bit more work on our shoulders of trying to find the thing that they do feel successful at, that they do feel good at doing.
Yeah. And these kids that we're talking about, these hypersensitive, intense feelers, and I put myself in that category. If I speak to my younger self, there is that really loud inner critic. And so what you're saying about that negativity bias, I can remember a lot of the criticism that I got from my parents, and my parents are good parents. I don't remember so much the encouragement, because my brain only wants to focus on that criticism. And that's the same. I have to remind myself of that for especially my youngest kid, because I see that self-criticism already. I see how that negative self-talk is developing, and I don't want to be that voice in his head, right? I mean, that's not my goal. So how can we empower them? I mean, through what you've already said, is like noticing those small things. What are other ways we can empower them to even change the way they talk to themselves?
Well, I think that comes with the experience of having people talking to them in this in this way. When we share and coach through Nurtured Heart, there's a exercise that we do. It's called the Jordan Experiential, and it's basically kind of going through a kid's day and hearing how what their parents are saying to this kid Jordan, and what teachers are saying to them, what the bus driver is saying, what the woman who's, you know, checking you out in the cafeteria is saying, and how in one example, it's all these little things that are not horrific, but definitely not encouraging, that are happening all throughout the day, which seems totally realistic and plausible in a kid's life. And then shifting that to a totally opposite experience of when our kids are having interactions with the adults in their lives that is over time encouraging, you know, step by step encouraging through the parents, through the bus driver, through the teachers, through the, you know, the checkout person in the cafeteria, which is not our world, right? We can only hope that our world may someday get there. But I think we just do our best with continuing to give to them that experience of, I see you, I hear you, I see what you're capable of, so that they can take that in and shift their own thinking about themselves.
Yeah. I wish that this, I mean, looking back, I wish that more of this had been out there in the world when I was growing up, because I don't think anybody knew how self-critical I was until depression hit in high school. And it was like, and it, by depression, I mean, it was just that overwhelmed burnout, like a complete shutdown. I've been trying so hard. I still don't feel good enough. I am done. I am tapped out. And root cause, sure, there's some other things going on for me at that point as well that were creating those symptoms. But I think we see that in a lot of our kids right now, is that shut down depression. And I saw it as a teacher. I saw those kids. It's like, you knew that they wanted to try hard and they wanted to be good enough, but they also felt completely defeated before they even began. And so I think that this is so important to have this approach of noticing and practicing that, just those, the baby steps of encouragement.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the other ways we do a lot of recognitions in Nurtured Heart, and there's a way of, recognizing kids for what they're choosing not to be doing. Like for instance, my boys have had a pretty tumultuous relationship over the years. And so for them, when I even see them on the couch, like sitting together, maybe reading, doing their own thing, like, oh my gosh, Jack and Isaac, look at you two sitting on the couch. You guys could be kicking, screaming, yelling at each other, and yet you're not. You're just sitting there quietly hanging out, reading a book. What amazing self-control the two of you are having. And so showing kids, I think we often feel scared to point out things that they could be doing, thinking, oh, we're giving them ideas about what they could be doing. But we're not, we actually don't act, see that happening. We don't see that that's how kids respond. If we frame it in, wow, look what you're not doing, and you're making such a good choice by not doing these things, we're showing them again how they are capable of making good choices. They're capable of making a choice not to be doing the wrong thing, and again, shifting their own, story about themselves.
So dinner time is difficult for us. So it would be the example of, wow, look at how you're just sitting down and eating and you're not complaining. That's an example. You're choosing not to complain. You're choosing. And I like the emphasis of the choice too. It's like, because there is a choice. I mean, there are times that internally I want to complain about the food too, because that's not really what I wanted to have, right? But I make the choice to nourish myself with the nutrient dense option. And so same for them to say, oh, I love that you're choosing to sit and eat your food without complaining about it.
I mean, I think I would separate them, right? Like, if you're giving them, I would keep it wholeheartedly. You're either giving them, telling them that they're doing a good job by not choosing to do these things, or they're really focused on making a good choice about what they are doing. So it could be more, hey, I see you sitting in your seat and eating dinner, with your fork or knife or whatever. Like, they're making a good choice of using table manners or whatever it is. Or it's, hey, I see you sitting there and you could be tossing your food across the room or complaining to me about dinner or starting in on your brother or whatever, and you're choosing not to. That shows a lot of self-control, and you're able to make good choices at dinner time.
I
I don't
love
know if
that.
that shift makes, if I hope that's making sense, I
No, it
guess.
totally makes sense. So, what do you recommend for supporting situations where a kid is just being defiant or is waking up raging? Or I hear all sorts of, I'm trying to think, or a kid who's just like having meltdowns and it's habitual. Like, are you talking about starting with these small things, or what are some ways? Like, what if something happens? You're like, well, we can't let this go. Got to do something about this. There's got to be a consequence. How do you handle that? Discipline.
That's such a great question, and this always comes up in some way or another, right? Like, what about the bigger things? If my kid's getting physical with their sibling, or
Good
yeah, they're
example.
just
Yeah, that's a good example.
raging or temper tantrum. And that's the hardest, those are the hardest moments, because we tend to get so triggered in those moments, right? When our kid is having
That's
such
true.
a hard time, we're either triggered, feeling frustrated and angry, or we get super empathetic and we feel like, oh my God, my kid's having such a hard time. How can I fix it? And we want to fix it. And we can't fix it, but we can let our kids know that we have faith in them, that they over time can handle these big feelings. And so and oftentimes, let me just come back a little bit. Oftentimes, more intense kids are looking for more intense interaction, and whether it's positive or negative,
Totally.
because they just are bigger feelers and they want to have a bigger feeling from an adult or a parent or even their sibling.
Those
So
stress chemicals feel good.
Yeah, they can feel good. So oftentimes what I'll recommend is standing nurtured heart is really clear, is based on these three stands. Stand one is not giving energy to negativity. Stand two is yes to recognizing everything that's going well. And then stand three is having real clear rules and boundaries and consistent consequences. And so when somebody's having a really hard time, when a kid is having a hard time and really escalating or getting dysregulated, whatever we want to call it, we quickly go into stand one, where we're not going to energize that negativity. Instead of a lot of times we go into a lot of conversation, or we want to correct, or we want to lecture or tell our kids not to be doing this thing, or how not to be doing this thing, or whatever it is. I certainly was a big lecturer, and it's really just I need to reset. I can see that you need to reset, and then trying to move away from it in one way or another, so that we're not continuing to engage. Because I don't know your experience, but I know my own experience is, the longer I stay engaged with my kid who's dysregulated and having a hard time, the more he continues to engage with me. And often he continues to escalate, and then I start escalating. So the more we can kind of pull our energy away from that particular situation that's going on, obviously, if there's a safety issue, we always have to deal with safety first, but in the most unenergized way. Right. So that we are trying to keep ourselves regulated, calm, unexciting. Like we talk about unplugging ourselves from that electrical source so that we can just be in the moment calmly, matter-of-factly, boring, so that it's not engaging to the kid. And then the minute that they are back to being themselves, we re-engage. We're right there with them again. There's not a long drawn out, oh, I'm so frustrated and irritated with you, and you did this thing, and I'm going to stay mad and give you the cold shoulder or not engage with you. The minute they're ready to be back, we have to be ready to be back too. I mean, if we need more time, we can speak to that. I'm still resetting here and I need a little more time and space. But we want to re-engage with them as quickly as we can, and let them say, let them know we're here. We love you. I still see you. I still hear you, and accept you for wholeheartedly who you are and all the amazing ways that you are. But trying not to do that when they are so dysregulated and having a hard time.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that. I think this is really so important. One of the best things that my youngest has started doing, and I don't know if it's because we told him, always tell us when you need a hug. He will go from raging 1 minute, whether it's like, hitting his brother or being mad about his sock not being on the right way, right? Or like it's twisted and he can't figure it out, like these typical things that our sensitive kids deal with, to I'm like, I'll go over there and I'm like, okay, we got to get to school, whatever it is. And I just need a hug is what he'll tell me. And that's my favorite thing. That is my favorite because I'm like, oh my gosh, absolutely. If all of, because so much of that, it's been helpful for me because I'm like, so much of that raging is really that he is dysregulated and he cannot regulate himself. He needs me, the adult, to be his calming source. So if he can tell me that every time he's having a screaming fit, that is way better than me trying to figure it out or me trying to, like you said, like logic it out of him because there's no logic to the fit. And so when he tells me that, I'm like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Let's take a second. Let me give you a hug. Hold on. Take some deep breaths. Totally different outcome. And so that's been my favorite thing for him to learn to say, even though it comes out in the weirdest times. And sometimes as a parent, you're like, yeah, but you're being a jerk,
Is hard.
and so it makes it hard. I'm like, no. Who is the adult and who is the one that, who is the only one who can help him learn to regulate his nervous system? Me. Like, that's it. He's not going to regulate it on his own. I was not taught how to regulate my nervous system. And most of us weren't. And so anyway, so I love that you mentioned that, because I do think just that, and sometimes when he's throwing a fit, and that's one of those things I remember as a teacher, like them talking about with special education, is doing like the just holding on to a kid and doing just kind of that. Or sometimes for him, I'll grab his feet. I'll just grab his feet and hold on to his feet, because that's grounding. It's like we get so much up into our heads. I do it too, that if you can just remember, think about your feet. So I'll hold on to his feet and say, think about your feet. And it can help. So yeah, so I love that you said that, because I think we go so quickly to being frustrated and wanting to, and not punish, that's probably the wrong word, but wanting to provide discipline or a consequence, or because I'm the parent, I'm in charge. When really it's like, yeah, but what are you in charge of really? Like, your job is to help this person grow into a regulated human. Like, that's pretty much it. So is what you are doing, and this is how I talk to myself, is what you are doing going to help model that outcome? No.
Yeah,
A lot
that
of
is
times, no.
yeah, because it is that modeling, you know, when he's having a hard time with his socks or whatever and getting fired up, like you being able to kind of stay more calm and what do we need to do to get out the door right now? I just need a hug. Like, how brilliant is that? Like, he has, even though maybe he's not saying it in the greatest of ways, he knows within himself, he's already figured out, I know that a hug is going to help me get back to being my best self again. And so he's speaking to that. And yes, I think it goes back to that modeling over and over again of when our kids are dysregulated, if we just start screaming and yelling too, then they're learning, oh, I guess that's what I do when I'm having big feelings. That's what my parent does. So that's what we do. We just start freaking out and screaming and yelling and throwing stuff or saying things that we regret later. But if we model, hey, I need to reset right now. I need to take a break. I need to take a moment. I'm going to take a couple deep breaths.
And the more we can learn to regulate ourselves, gosh, I mean, if I could go back, I've got, a 19-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old. If I could go back 12 years ago and tell myself what I've learned in the last 7 years, or really since I started practicing yoga, which is almost eight, yeah, a little over 8 years ago. Just that was a first step for me. It was learning to breathe and move, and timing that provided so much regulation that I never had before. And so for anybody listening, I mean, regulate yourself first. That's so helpful.
I mean, Erin, it's clear that you are very intuitive already, you know, and how and intentional with how you are with your kids, which it shows me, and it's really clear how much you really care about them and you are dedicated to helping guide them to be, you know, successful adults in life someday, which is, it's beautiful.
I think you're using that trick on me to keep me doing it. Is that positive feedback thing?
That's nurtured heart,
I
right?
love
Yeah.
it.
That's how, but how did that feel?
Oh, it was so good. It's like, because at first my inner critic was like, yeah, but I screw up a lot too. But then it was like, no, you know what? You're right. As a whole, I am killing it.
Exactly.
It worked. It totally worked.
And
I
that's
hope
the
listeners heard
part
that.
of
That
it.
definitely works. Well, tell me, where can people learn more about you and follow you on social media and learn more about your programs?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, both my names, Jennifer Nathanson. Facebook, I think it might have my maiden name, Jennifer Reiser Nathanson. And then I have a website, which is also my name, jennifernathanson.com.
Awesome. And then last question before we go. The name of the show is Sparking Wholeness. So if you could give one piece of advice to spark someone toward wholeness, what would it be?
You know, you touched on this earlier, and I was actually touching on this with my boys yesterday when we were walking to the store. That we inter the interactions that we have day to day with everybody we come in contact with, we have the ability to have an impact, and we can choose whether our impact is kind and friendly and loving and considerate, or we can choose to just kind of keep to ourselves and ignore or not interact. And one day we may be feeling one way or the other, but I think keeping in mind that, we all in some ways suffer and have hard times. And when we can put out kindness and generosity and love and caring, it is only going to have I think, a positive impact overall for the people that we're interacting with on a day-to-day basis, or strangers, people we just come in contact with randomly. And it's those little shifts over time that I think can have a larger impact on the world in whole.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, be the lightning. Be
The lightning. Yeah, exactly
the
what you were talking with your
yeah.
boys about.
Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on. I'm glad we did not have in this storm that I'm having at home, no power outages, nothing crazy going on. And so this has been such a great discussion. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be on.
Thanks, Erin. It's super fun.
The tiniest spark leads to the biggest blaze. And I hope that today's episode sparks you on a journey to healing and wholeness. Thanks for listening to Sparking Wholeness. For more information on what I do and my coaching programs, or maybe just to reach out and say hey, find me at sparkingwholeness.com or on Instagram at sparkingwholeness. Have a fabulous week.